And welcome back to Coast, John Egan with us, his book, Between Love and Hate. We're talking about the devil. We're going to find out exactly what happened. And apparently the devil gave John three messages. And we'll also take your calls and maybe your story, too, when we come back. Well, before the break, John was describing what this demon looked like. It was loaded with horns. It's got to have scared the heck out of you, John.
Well, absolutely. But the thing was, it didn't come in like a crazy, like you see on TV, like I said, like with lightning and wind blowing around, chairs flying around, and animal noises. It came in so slowly, like I explained, that it didn't want to scare me out because it wanted to just give me the message that it wanted. And it's now standing straight in front of me. I'm standing up now off the couch, and I'm standing about 3 feet away from the tip of his horns. And it's looking at me straight in the eye. Its eyes were just pure black. It had no pupils or anything like that. This is unfathomable. It's impossible to fully explain. I mean, like, the horns were coming out of the top of his head, but it's in the middle of a blazing fire, but yet its face wasn't burnt. So I can't explain that or understand why that is. It seemed to be fine. I mean, I always thought, like, if these creatures got kicked out of heaven and went to hell, well, what are they doing roaming the earth? But this creature was still in hell, and it was here, but was powerful and intelligent enough to manipulate a dimension so he could pass through and do whatever it had to do. So it's looking at me. I'm standing there. I'm not going to run out of the house because it doesn't look like it could pass. It's only up to his head, and for me, I felt a little at ease about that because it didn't look like it could pass all the way through those flames. I want to tell you what it told me about those flames, but the first thing it said to me was, and when it moved, this looks like when something's confrontationally staring you right in the face, like most men, when they talk to each other, they talk a little bit on an angle, you know, but this was confrontationally staring me right in the face, and I heard it say, no more, like that, because I was staring at it, and I was watching it, its lips didn't seem to say no more, but I heard no more, but I guess whatever language it speaks there, in that chastisement, or what you might say is hell, it knew how to translate that to me. Then I'm thinking to myself, what does that mean? No more. Does that mean no more praying? And I realized, it doesn't want me. I know what it means. I mean, it doesn't want me to pray for these souls, because every single day I pray for these souls that I think are lost souls. And I just, you know, I ask God, just give them one more chance before they go there or you send them there.
Did you ever feel threatened, John, by this demon? Physically threatened?
Well, it looked like, because it looked like 100% hatred, not like 99.9, 100% hatred. It looked powerful like a lion. It looked like if it could break through those flames, it could just ram me right into the wall with all those horns coming out of its head. But it didn't do that. And it just wanted to continue what it wanted for the message that it came for. And it wanted to continue with that. And because I was looking at those flames so much, I mean, it's just a blazing flame. But I couldn't hear it. I couldn't smell it. I didn't see anything burning. I didn't see any smoke coming off the flames. But then it told me that only my spirit would feel the effects of these flames. And then it kind of made sense to me because, I'm not a spirit yet. I'm just a flesh and blood person. So I guess for him, he could feel to me, it looked like God's burning detestation for sin. And but for some reason, he owned it. He something is in hell, but it seemed like that's where it wanted to be.
Did you ever feel, though, at any point that it wanted your soul to take back?
No, I didn't. No. Don't let me forget to tell you what it did before it left and how I got it out of the house. So then, it's still confrontational. It chose every word it said to me with fastidious care. Because I'm an artist, I'm trying, and I'm not that frightened. I'm burning this image into my head so I could paint it and draw it once if I lived through this. I wasn't sure, what was going to happen, but I didn't feel that threatened where I'd run out of the house. So now I know that this fire is that won't affect me as a human being, but it will affect my spirit, like whatever he is. It wasn't like transparent, George. It was like I was standing right in front of you. Everything was like I was standing right in front of you. It wasn't like transparent or looking through things. No, it was just real as it could possibly be. This creature had the power to create this portal for itself to deliver me a message. It was intelligent and powerful. Just because it looked like a creature didn't mean it didn't have this intelligence. And it said, what I thought was a threat, it said, I am many and many more wicked than I. So I was thinking, what does that mean? And I thought to myself, maybe you know, it's telling me no more prayers, don't pray for these souls. Whatever soul's coming in this direction, it wants them. I don't even know why. I mean, the only reason I can imagine is because that's how they get even with God or something like that. I'm not sure. That's how they hurt God, by taking souls in there. I realize, again, that this is almost like a choice of yours. When you pass through these dimensions, God's sending you to hell. You might want to go there. I mean, these things can bewitch your spirit. I mean, they have many wiles and deceptions. They know how to seduce and entile and beguile your soul. It's going to show you how to use, like, I tell people, don't leave this earth with hatred in your heart. That's embedded into your soul. You got to root that out, because this creature was 100% hatred. It's going to show you how to use that hatred to alleviate all your pain. I could see that.
But you never felt threatened, like it was going to hurt you or anything like that.
Oh, absolutely not, because like I said, it came in so slowly. It didn't make any kind of moves. Like, you would know body language, you know, if it's jumping at you
or grab you or something.
It didn't do anything like that.
Okay. And how long was it in the house?
It was long enough for, if you could imagine, in the house. I was in the house for, like, I would say at least a month.
You had to live there with that there for a month?
Yeah, but George, I wasn't positive. I mean, I'm just a guy. Like, I thought, okay, because my wife was said, she's gonna live at the beach house until I get this under control. And I was like, I said, okay, but I don't really know how to get this under control. I mean, go get an exorcism done in the house. Is that really going to work? I'm not sure. And all the parishioners, I mean, we did establish ourselves in this area. And, you know, we know all the parishioners from church. We know all the priests. All right, you know, what's good? By the time the third person tells somebody there, I'm going to be like the devil man or something. You know what I mean? So I didn't want to really start anything like that. But now I guess they're beginning to know, because I've been talking about it a lot. And the book is selling a lot. So I guess it's going to be out there no matter what I try to do. But George, I didn't know what to do, as just being a guy. I didn't have any idea. I was very naive about this. I didn't realize this thing had a methodology. It had a method, doing what it was going to do. It wanted to deliver this message to me. It wanted me to stop praying for these souls. I didn't want anything interfering with the souls that want to come to him, or the souls that are going, that have to go to him. Because it seems like now, like I say, a lot of this is unfathomable, but it seems like, to me now, it's like a choice. But you don't want to, if you don't want to leave here with hatred in your heart, hatred weighs you down, even as a human being. You're going to fly if you take yourself lightly. So you're not, and then get all that hatred out of your soul. I mean, if you hate your family, your brothers or sisters, your neighbors, any race, religion, or nationality, get that out of you before you leave here, because this creature is going to show you how to use that hatred to alleviate all your pain. And I can see that's what it does. That's all it's going to do. That's all it's going to do for all of eternity. And that's like unfathomable, just to think that this, you can, souls and it are going to be there forever.
How did you get rid of it?
Oh, I'm going to tell you what happened. So I get its messages. It tells me no more. I told you when it moved his lips, because I was so, you know, concentrating on it and trying to focus this in my mind and burn this image into my head, because I thought, if I live through this, I'm going to paint this thing right down to every single detail. So I was trying to memorize every piece of its head, every piece of his eyes, his nose was pointy. I'm telling myself his nose is pointy, the horns are coming this way and that way, and I'm trying to, because I could do that. If I was standing with you and you wanted me to draw a picture of you, I could go home and draw a picture of you if I stood there and memorize what you look like. So I had just happened to have that talent. So I knew I was going to do that with this. But the problem was, okay, so right before, so it looks at me, because I'm Catholic, I pray with a rosary. I put the rosaries on the glass table. It was on my right to begin with. It was on his left. So when I got up, I'm standing in front of him. So he looks down on his left, and he sees my rosary. He looks back at me. He knew they were there the whole time. And his face starts to blow up, and a big piece of saliva flies out of his mouth right onto my rosaries, and he did that slowly too. And then he looked back at me slowly, right in my eyes again, with its black eyes. It had no pupils, just had black eyes, and just looked at me like that. And then it just backed out as slowly as it came in. It backed out that slowly, like nothing could threaten it, or nothing could hurt it, or it did what it wanted to do to my rosaries, and there's nothing I could do about it. And just as he backed out, he just was looking at me straight in the eyes, and he backed out as slowly as he came in. And then that blue raging fire that I couldn't hear or smell or see anything burning off it, that started to dissipate, and then the rippling came back for a second or two, and that disappeared.
And he never came back.
Well, the next day, I'm thinking to myself, because I'm Catholic, and the Bible tells me I could raise the dead, heal the sick, cast out demons in Jesus' name. So I go to church the next day. I come back here. I get my wife keeps holy water in the kitchen. I take that holy water in every single room. I say, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave this house immediately. And I go through every single room.
I'd be dumping buckets of holy water all over the house.
I know. I go through every single room. I go even go in the attic, in the furnace room, everywhere where I think closets. When I go into the last room, George, I'm saying that in the last room, and I feel a swish, the curtains and the blinds swish, and I feel it leaves. And I felt that evil presence had left. So I felt it was gone. So this was like a year. And George, I haven't even heard a bump in the night since that
Good.
Since that day.
Thank God.
So. Oh, thank God, that's right. But I mean, the thing came. The thing was able. It was powerful enough to manipulate a dimension. It was powerful and intelligent enough to tell me what it had, what it wanted to tell me. And I don't know. Like I say, I am many and many.
And buzz through forest, John. Those three messages you said that this creature, this entity, tried to impart on you. What were they? You said three.
No more.
You said they had three messages that they
that
wanted
was the
to
message.
Take.
No more was the first message to me.
No more.
No more.
Okay.
No more. So then I thought, what does that mean? And I thought, okay, I know. I think I know what that means. No more praying for these souls, because these souls come to him. They didn't. The other message was the other thing it said. The message it said when I was looking at that blue raging flame, he said only my spirit would feel the effects of this fire, and that made a lot of sense to me too, because that was, you know, that was. I was in the spirit. It didn't affect me, but I guess it's that chastisement. It was God's burning detestation for sin. So that was the message that I understood from it. And then, of course, it said, I am many and many more wicked than I. So it told me a message of there's many of these creatures there. But, I mean, you know, when you read in the Bible, you know, like I said, I'm skeptical myself. But you read the Bible, a third of the, you know, like these creatures, these powerful ones like this one, probably convinced all these other, about a third of the angels to break off. They probably didn't want to be with God anymore. They wanted to break off on their own. They convinced a third of these angels to follow them. So this is
wow, he
many.
Did. Yeah. Big mistake to follow them. Let's take some calls
That's what
for
I'm
you.
Saying.
Mark, first
That's
time caller in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on with us. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, George.
Hi there.
Yeah, I've had an experience with what he's calling the fifth dimension twice in my life. And the only difference is my experience was I met face to face with God and not a demon or a devil.
You were the lucky one.
Yeah.
Well, what? Just out of curiosity, did God say anything to you?
Well, I was going through some tough times in my life, and I was basically praying for the return of Christ. You were praying for souls. I was praying for the return of Christ. He basically encouraged me and went through a whole series of whether I had faith to believe this could happen or that could happen. And anyway, that's a long part of the story. But in the end, he said, well, if I gave you the power to, you know, have Christ return right now, would you do it? And as soon as he asked me that, I started thinking about all the lost souls. And I just said, no, I can't. There's too many people that need to be saved yet.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah, you know, we love Christ. We want to see him. But once he comes, that's it, right? That's the end, isn't it? I mean,
did you ever, though, right? Question yourself, John, and just ask yourself, why is this demon visiting me? I'm not a bad guy. I'm not evil. What's he want with me?
Oh, I knew what he wanted with me. I knew that he wanted me to stop praying. I knew he didn't want me to pray for these souls or give them a second chance, you know, because they didn't have it here. And I felt I bonded with these people. I befriended these people. I knew them. I didn't hang out with them because they were kind of, like I said, a little bit wicked in their ways. But I still could relate. I could relate to anybody out
mm-hmm.
there. And I could relate to these people. I could laugh with them and, you know, joke with them and stuff like that. So I felt like I knew these people. And I just couldn't just – I felt helpless for them when I heard that they died from accidents and overdoses. And I just felt terrible for them. And I felt like they're going to be – you know, in this fifth dimension, and heading towards these demons. And, and I was just saying, you know, God, you know, if you can, pray for these souls. Can you do whatever you can for them over there? Maybe talk to them or something like that, or teach them, you know, what that there are. Yeah. Because there's going to be this love and hate, like the book says. We're between love and hate in this universe here, and you want to go where there's love. But if you're a person who, like I said, has harbored hate in your heart and it's embedded in your soul, you're not going where these people can forgive their neighbors, can't forgive their family, can't forgive people from race, religion, and nationality. You're not going that way. You don't even want to go that way. That's the thing about this. You're going to go with this creature because he's going to teach you how to use that hatred to alleviate all your pain. You know what I mean? You're going to even almost want to go to hell. That's the...
Not me. Not me. Dave in Cleveland. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, well, I've been waiting a long time. I was listening to Art Bell trying to get through with this story that happened 36 years ago.
Wow.
My parents were alive back then. They lived upstairs. My two sisters, I lived downstairs by the basement. And I had this dream one time. Okay, I was about 19 years old, 36 years ago. I was totally underground. I'm trying to escape all these snakes grabbing me and everything, mm-hmm. trying to pull me down even farther. And some man pulled me in the bathroom with the light on, and he had a brown suit on, glasses, about 60 years old back then, had glasses, you know, normal-looking guy with a brown suit. I said, and I brushed off all this hair and stuff off from the snakes or whatever. I go, "Thank you, sir." I go, "Who are you?" He says, "The devil."
Oh, geez.
I laughed at him. I said, "No, you're not." And you know what he did? I looked in the air, like a space, like outer space. He says, "Want to see what I really want?" Like that, just like that, that voice. It freaked me out. And then I seen his fire, and then John was talking about the horns and all over the place. And I start stuttering, so I was scared to death. I go, yes, sir. I call him, "Sir, what do you want?" And he goes, "Yeah, look, I have to agree." He went back to the normal-looking guy, you know, with the brown suit and older guy with glasses. He goes, "Just want to make a deal with you." And I said, "Deal?" I go, "I don't want to make a deal with you." And he goes, "Okay." And he just, and all of a sudden, I woke up. I saw this light come on my bedroom window, and the sun just came out. And I seen these little tiny angels singing, and just like heavenly music or something, you know. I guess I avoided.
You're lucky he didn't take you, David, because he was after your soul. Hey, we've got to hit the break, but we're going to come back in just a moment with final phone calls. John Egan with us. The book is called Between Love and Hate, The Devil is Real. And after listening to him tonight, I'm convinced the devil is real. To be sure. His website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We make it really easy for you to get to the guest's website. We'll be back. We'll be back in a moment with John Egan, author of Between Love and Hate, as we talk about the devil. We'll take final calls as well here on Coast to Coast. On our next Coast to Coast program, Mr. Lobo joins us for a couple hours to talk about some really scary films. And welcome back, John Egan with us, Between Love and Hate, as we talk about the devil, our final segment of calls. Joe in Long Island, New York's with us. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, John. It sounds like the description of the devil that greeted you is almost similar to something in the book of Revelation. But I want to relate Proverbs chapter 7 to this. It's talking about two women in Proverbs chapter 7. It's talking about a kinswoman. It says, "Make wisdom your kinswoman and understanding, wisdom and understanding, and write the wisdom on the tablet of your heart, or mark the wisdom on the tablet of your heart." Now, to me, this is the anecdote for the mark of the devil in the book of Revelation, or the beast, you know, the 666. The anecdote for this is the wisdom of the Lord. And it goes on to describe a strange woman. Now, the strange woman is not really a strange woman. It's just a metaphor for temptation and the devil. And it talks about this woman seducing men in the night while her husband's away. and enticing them, and then forcing them with flattering lips. So I think this is a device of the devil, where the initial lure is like an enticement. The devil is not gonna dress the thing up as where it's not obvious that it's the devil. And then as you get lured in, it changes to a force play. You're kind of in the jaws.
You're stuck.
Yeah, yeah. So only later on does the devil reveal the true intentions, what's going to really happen, and forces that upon you. So if you look at the book of Proverbs, that directly relates to, I think, what you're saying. And I wonder, John, if your previous work in the bars, somehow you picked up some of these demonic entities.
Well, that's an interesting possibility. Could that have happened, yeah, your job as a bartender?
That's possible. I mean, who really knows? I mean, that's possible, but that was good advice. I mean, keep those wisdom in your heart, you know what I mean? Keep that first thing in your mind, what you were talking about. And, yeah, that's good advice. And who knows if this thing came out of it could be there. I mean, it could exist there. And, you know, so, as like I said, there was wicked people there, and some of them were into the occult. A lot of them were atheists. And hey, who knows?
That who knows? Came from there. John, where do you get your book, Between Love and Hate?
Yeah, Between Love and Hate. You go to John-Egan, EAGAN.com. It's a 350-page ebook. You press a few buttons, that's where you get it. You know, you'll understand your life purpose, and it will transform your life. You know, if you really want to give yourself the gift of understanding the unknown, john-egan.com. There's so many things in this book. If you really want to know thyself, it teaches you how to know thyself. There's many other spiritual stories in this book that people say cry when they read them.
Well, I'm just glad you got rid of the devil.
The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. True. Nervous, very, very dreadfully nervous, I had been and am. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in the heaven and the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none, passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, it was this. He had the eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold, and so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now this is the point. You fancy me mad? Madmen know nothing. But you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation I went to work. I was never kinder to the old man than during the week before I killed him. And every night, about midnight, I turned the latch of his door and opened it, oh, so gently. And then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a dark lantern. All closed, closed, that no light shone out. And then I thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it slowly. Very, very slowly, so that I might not disturb the old man's sleep. It took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening, so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. Ah, would a madman have been so wise as this? And then, when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh, so cautiously, cautiously, for the hinges creaked. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight. But I found the eye always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work. for it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning, when the day broke, I went boldly into the chamber, and spoke courageously to him, calling him by name in a hearty tone, and inquiring how he has passed the night. So you see, he would have been a very profound old man, indeed, to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in upon him while he slept. Upon the eighth night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moves more quickly than did mine. Never before that night had I felt the extent of my own powers, of my sagacity. I could scarcely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that there I was, opening the door little by little, and he not even to dream of my secret deeds or thoughts. I fairly chuckled at the idea, and perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly, as if startled. Now you may think that I drew back, but no. His room was as black as pitch with the thick darkness, for the shutters were close fastened through fear of robbers, and so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on, steadily, steadily. I had my head in, and was about to open the lantern, when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept quite still and said nothing. For a whole hour I did not move a muscle, and in the meantime I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in the bed listening, just as I have done, night after night, hearkening to the death watches in the wall. Presently I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief. It was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when overcharged with awe. I knew this sound well. Many a night, just at midnight, when all the world slept, it was welled up from my own bosom, deepening, with its dreadful echo, the terrors that distracted me. I say I knew it well. I knew what the old man felt, and pitied him, although I chuckled at heart. I knew that he had been lying awake ever since the first slight noise, when he had turned in the bed. His fears had been ever since growing upon him. He had been trying to fancy them causeless, but could not. He had been saying to himself, "It is nothing but the wind in the chimney. It is only a mouse crossing the floor, or it is merely a cricket which has made a single chirp." Yes, he had been trying to comfort himself with all these suppositions, but he had found all in vain. All in vain, because death, in approaching him, had stalked with his black shadow before him and enveloped the victim. And it was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he neither saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. When I had waited a long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern. So I opened it. You cannot imagine how stealthily, until at length a simple dim ray, like the thread of the spider, shot from out the crevice and fell upon the vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open, and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with a perfect distinctness, all a dull blue with a hideous veil over it that chilled the very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray as if by instinct precisely upon the damned spot. And have I not told you that what you mistake for madness is but over-acuteness of the sense? Now, I say, there came to my ears a low, dull, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well, too. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates the soldier into courage. But even yet I refrained and kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. I tried how steadily I could maintain the ray upon the eve. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder every instant. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder. I say louder every moment. Do you mark me well? I have told you that I am nervous. So I am. And now, at the dead hour of the night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet for some minutes longer I refrained and stood still. But the beating grew louder, louder. I thought the heart must burst. And now a new anxiety seized me. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once only. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. I then smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes, the heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, did not vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. At length, it ceased. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the corpse. Yes, he was stone dead. I placed my hand upon the heart and held it there for many minutes. There was no pulsation. He was stone dead. His Eve would trouble me no more. If you still think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. The night waned, and I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head and the arms and the legs. I then took up three planks from the flooring of the chamber and deposited all between the scantlings. I then replaced the board so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out, no stain of any kind, no blood spot whatever. I had been too wary for that. When I had made an end of these labors, it was 4 o'clock, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, there came a knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart, for what had I now to fear? There entered three men, who introduced themselves with perfect suavity as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night. Suspicion of foul play had been aroused. Information had been lodged at the police office, and they, the officers, had been deputed to search the premises. I smiled, for what had I to fear? I bade the gentlemen welcome. The shriek, I said, was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I bade them search well. I led them at length to his chamber. I showed them his treasures, secure, undisturbed. In the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from their fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. I was singularly at ease. They sat, and while I answered cheerily, they chatted of familiar things. But ere long, I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ears. But still they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. It continued and became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definiteness until at length I found that the noise was not within my ears. No doubt I now grew very pale, but I talked more fluently and with a heightened voice, yet the sound increased, and what could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound, much such as a sound a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. I talked more quickly, more vehemently, but the noise steadily increased. I arose and argued about trifles in a high key with violent gesticulations, but the noise steadily increased. Why would they not be gone? I paced the floor to and fro with heavy strides, as if excited to fury by the observations of the men, but the noise steadily increased. Oh, God, what could I do? I foamed, I raved, I swore. I swung the chair upon which I had been sitting and grated it upon the boards. But the noise arose over all and continually increased. It grew louder, 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 and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they heard not? Almighty God! No, no, they heard, they suspected, they knew, they were making a mockery of my horror. This I thought, and this I think. But anything was better than this agony. Anything was more tolerable than this derision. I could bear those hypocritical smiles no longer. I felt that I must scream or die. And now, again, hark! Louder! 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 Villains, I shrieked, dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here, here, it is the beating of his hideous heart.
What an old classic. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Loonhood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, Be safe, everyone.